Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex. Who are you?
I'm Nat Tazin.
Yeah, and we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. We are coming to you later on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you listen to. That's totally cool as well. But as you may have noticed, Justin and Pete are not here this week, so Nat has agreed to avoid the gut punches and instead jump in here where it's nice and safe. Nat, how are you doing?
I'm great. Nothing's gone wrong in the past 2 years of my life, and I feel good all the time.
Oh, that's very cool. So a couple of things we could probably talk about before we bring in our guests here. First of all, what have you been reading lately? What have you been checking out comics-wise? Because I feel like we've had you on for trivia, and we talk about you boiling catcher's mitts, and then that's pretty much it.
Well, sometimes you talk about how Pete wants to punch me. Both very good running jokes that are accessible to new listeners, I want to say. And
Listen, like comics itself, we're trying to whittle down the audience as much as possible.
Do you guys use legacy numbering for the podcast now, or have you rebooted the
universe?
This
is an alpha issue of the podcast right here.
Oh, okay. So this is before the number zero.
Yes.
Alpha. Or this takes between zero and one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you need to read number 56.cbc to really understand what happened.
Right. I would like also a mini series explaining what happens in between those issues, if possible, numbered in a completely different dynamic, if possible.
Absolutely. Comics.
What was the question? Comics. I've been reading. Yeah, they're for kids. Kids love the Dewey Decimal System and several worse systems, right? Mm-hmm. I have been reading. I got to say right now, I'm all in on Marvel's X books. I'm not saying every one of them is incredible, but you have to read all of them, and they got me. I'm reading all of them.
This is great. I love this show much more already. This is good. Nat.
Yeah, you're going to say X-Men and not get screamed at by one of the biggest X-Men fans, you know.
Spider-Man and Mary Jane broke up a long time ago, and it doesn't emotionally affect me anymore?
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I would say emotionally a different person than I was at the time. So kind of the pain is actually contextualized by my own maturity.
Oh, this is great. I can explain what I like about the Punisher beyond the fact that he shoots guns.
Yeah, I feel like he's a character that is really a product of his time, and I think merits a nuanced discussion of sort of the sociopolitical climate of the 1970s and 80s when Frank Miller was creating him, and sort of how does that character actually have a place in modern television, or has it been bastardized, or modern comics, you know, has the very idea is sort of a cultural artifact that may actually not have a place in modern society. And I think that there's an argument to be made for either, or some sort of a nuanced middle ground.
Man, you sound like fucking Pete when you say that shit.
I'm going to punch you.
just to make sure that we're not only coming for Pete, I also want to thank you for showing up on time. That's a Justin joke.
I don't like Starman. I do really like Starman. I felt bad saying that out loud.
Yeah, I know. It's really good. Anyway, we do miss Pete and Justin. Good. Justin's going to be back next week. Pete is actually off in the mountains somewhere for a while, having a lovely old time. So that's pretty cool. I did want to mention we have a drink after a rather harried week or week and a half or so. Brett Macris, our resident chef, Stray Bullet, has once again been curating drinks from the Gotham City Cookbook. Gotham City Cocktail Book, which is very cool. It's based in the continuity of Gotham City. We had Audrey Darlington, the cocktailier behind it, on the show a month or two back at this point. And very, very awesome. The drink this week is called The Butler. And I'll read some of the stuff here. So it's, other than acknowledging that he grew up in England, Alfred Pennyworth rarely mentions his life outside Wayne Manor. What is certain is Alfred's impeccable taste, no doubt shaped by his travels around the world outside Wave Manor. And this is basically, this is a gin and tonic, but it's Southeast Asian inspired. So it has a makrut, lime leaf, four whole black peppercorns, a lemon peel, 2.5 ounces of gin, 4 ounces of tonic water, cucumber slice for garnish. So very nice. So Nat, can we see your drink?
Oh, yeah. Drink. Well, here's about how far I got.
Oh, no. Is that a glass of gin and
let's
a
say, yeah, you know, I think okay. Poetically, Poetica license, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm drinking a glass of gin and a lime. I didn't get so far as a knife. I didn't get so far as a makrut lime leaf or learning exactly what that is. So, you know, I feel like we all had a hard week, whether it's our chef in residence who lives in a city where they completely lost power and had to relocate, or me who had to perform stand-up comedy twice. So, you know, it's understandable.
Same thing. Same basic thing, to be perfectly honest with you. Also, he says he's still in Florida, which sounds even more horrible, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I hope you're keeping the windows shut.
Yeah, I have to apologize as well. I just picked up a Lagunitas IPA for this week. The drinks sound lovely and delicious and refreshing, but after a hard day, I was like, I need to run and grab a beer, and I can't process these limes and peppercorns, Brett, even though they sound amazing, but I'll try to make it tomorrow.
I'm going to make it as soon as we get done. I just want to be really sharp and focused because I care about professionalism and our broadcast.
There you go. So to that end, as Brett points out, yes, it's been a weird couple of weeks, but we're getting back to normal with two great guests for you on this week's show. I'm going to welcome them into the stream now. They are the creators of the very adorable, very lovely book, Mayor Good Boy, which is out already. We have here Miranda Harmon and Dave Scheidt. Hello. Welcome.
How are you? Welcome.
Hello.
Yay. Welcome to the show. So excited to have you here. Mayor Good Boy. People could probably figure this out even from the title, which is one of the things that I think is so great about it, is you hear that and you're like, I know what this is about. But it is about a dog who is elected mayor and the kids who assist him. Now, this was, maybe I got this wrong from the material I was reading in the book, but this was essentially like a cold call in a certain way, right? Like you just cold submitted this, or am I totally wrong about that?
Well, so Dave approached me with the idea for the book, and Random House before that asked me to pitch to them. And so the timing worked out really well because we pitched it together.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't like you storming into Random House and saying, we've got a graphic novel for you.
Three words.
We would have if we had to at that point. Yeah, you know? We're extremely thirsty for that. So we would have if that's what needed to be done.
Yeah. Well, where did the idea for Mayor Good Boy start? Were you looking at a dog and being like, that dog looks like Bill de Blasio?
Were you looking at the New York mayoral race and saying, well, how could it be? Couldn't be worse if it was a dog.
Well, it's actually, I think you talk a lot about just like creating, and I think we kind of romanticize the idea of like, you know, like what writing is like. It's like you develop these like fully formed things, and it's like this, like, you know, this miracle of an idea comes away. But I was looking through some notes because I just have tons of just indecipherable like weird messages and like notes on my note app. And I think from, I think it was 2015 at like whatever I was doing at like 11:45 at night on like a Tuesday, I just have a note that just says dog mayor. And that was from years and years and years ago. So that was like, you know, just two words, you know, like there's no story, there's no characters, there's no hook, there's nothing. And I think like, I think with creating in general, that's kind of how it works. I'm not sure if that's probably with Miranda too. You kind of just come up with like a million weird half form things. And so I don't know what was going on, but apparently we struck gold at like 11 o'clock at night and thought of that. Yeah, so it kind of just came, it was sort of just, I think with a lot of the comics I want to do, and I like collaborate with, you know, my friends and other creators and stuff, it's like, you kind of just develop something together. So Mayor Good Boy was kind of just, it was sort of there, but Miranda really like brought it to life and fully realized it and everything. So it was kind of, it's strange when you're pitching comics, you kind of have sort of an idea, but you're almost kind of asking yourself questions you normally wouldn't think creatively. So you kind of like, you're developing it as you're trying to think of like what it's about, who the characters are, you know, what the hook is, all that stuff too. So we kind of just sort of went back and forth and kind of just like, you know, came up with stuff. And, you know, thankfully we kind of, I don't know, I think we created something really fun.
Well, Miranda, over to you then. If Dave is giving you the credit for really bringing it to life, where did that crisp in for you? At what point did you figure out, oh, okay, this is kind of what Mayor Goodboy is going to be?
Well, I mean, I think that in the beginning, especially, we really worked together to kind of decide like what kind of book we wanted to make. Like we both like they, you know, we both have kind of similar sensibilities, I think. And Dave's comics are really, really fun and really silly. But also we wanted to make it like a good message too for kids. And mm-hmm. so that was definitely both of us. But like when I like Dave's kind of gave me like the names of the characters and sort of the feel, like his idea for the town. And I did like design all the characters, and Greenwood too. Like when we first pitched the page or the first made the pitch pages, like the first image is like a postcard of Greenwood and City Hall and the theater and all these places that show up again and again.
Where did the decision come from to make these two supporting kid characters? It's Aaron and Andy, right? Like there's actually almost more focus on them, at least in the first volume, than there is necessarily on Mayor Goodboy.
It's Aaron and Abby are the two Abby. Brother and sister. I don't know. I think just at the end of the day, anything we like to create, it's always like something I think that I would enjoy as a kid. So it's kind of, I think sincerity in comics is really important, because I think when you read a really good comic, you could tell the people creating it if they enjoyed it or not, or if it's just something they're kind of, you know, trying to make something just to make create a movie, or just trying to be super messed up or super violent, whatever. We really kind of just set out to make a book that we really didn't see on the shelves and something we'd really enjoy ourselves. And I don't know. I think just with kids comics in general, there's just this amazing readership within comics in general. And I think we kind of set out to make a comic for kids and nothing specifically just like, I think some people make the mistake of kind of like gendering comics where they're like, oh, this is a girl's comic. This is a boy's comic. This is, you know, we kind of just wanted to make something really fun that I think kids would for one enjoy and like laugh at and it's goofy and fun, but also, you know, kind of just teach kids just, you know, important lessons and stuff like that. But it's, we're never narrowing our scope of like, you know, pandering towards a specific, you know, like what you, the expectations of like what a book should be. You just want like any kid to be able to pick this up and maybe find something in there that they like about it, whether it's a character that looks like them or a joke that's funny to them or a cute dog. We kind of just wanted to, you know, create like an accessible book for, you know, kids of, you know, all backgrounds and stuff.
Yeah. I really thought it was an interesting decision. I like that you made, you gave the younger brother a sort of like exuberant confidence, and the older sister actually has like very palpable anxiety in the book, where she's like really second guesses herself, and that people have to like sort of give her confidence throughout. And she gains confidence as she's going, you know, as the book progresses, like getting this job working, spoiler, working for the mayor. it's on like page 4, but
they never meet.
You're never gonna move any copies now. Interview's garbage, but now, like, anyway, now that I've ruined it, yeah, well, she gains, you know, some degree of confidence by proving herself, by finding allies, by finding friends. And it kind of reminded me, if you've watched or read it, the dynamic between the siblings in Over the Garden Wall, where there's younger one is not old enough to be.
Yeah, totally. Huge inspiration, all-time favorite. We love it.
Well, that's a really... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah.
I was just going to say it's a very real dynamic between, like, young enough to have no self-doubt and old enough to start worrying, essentially. And that, you know, that can happen for some kids around 7 or 8 years old. I thought that was a really interesting... Yeah. Is that from your life? Why did you choose to depict that?
So I think with that, I essentially like grew up, like my sister practically raised me for the most part. And I kind of think for just me, I think there's like a weird thing in pop culture where you kind of have this weird kind of like trope that like brothers and sisters can't get along, which I find super weird, because I'm like, you know, I was like best friends with my sister when I was little, you know? And I think just like, I don't know, certain relationships like that, I think like are kind of underrepresented in comics. And I think... And I'm glad you picked up on the Aaron thing, because I think that's a funny way of looking at, like, we always view confidence as this good thing, but, like, Aaron is just, like, you know, like, he's too confident. That's almost, like, his problem. He's just so he's so sure of himself, even in like the most ridiculous situations, he's like so sure of it.
And comics, I was gonna say the comics often focus on a hyper proficient character, and the thing that you're supposed to like about the character is that they can do at least one thing very well. And I feel I remember being as a a kid, you have these sort of aspirational power fantasies that you get from comic books, but you're like, how come there's no switch that turns for me that makes everything easier all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting to see a character, you know, grow from not being confident, or also seeing a character who is confident, like, have that there are actually pitfalls to having no self-consciousness.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think we're really proud of just Abby's journey, because I think a lot of the feedback we've been getting, and it's really nice to hear people that they think, you know, they feel like the characters are realistic, which it's not like we really set out to be like, hey, let's write. You can never really set out and be like, hey, I'm going to write super realistic dialogue for kids or whatever. I just think just that lived-in experience of like the relationship of being friends with your sibling and just their two personalities and how they work together, I think. I don't know. I just really love those characters. I think Aaron is like one of the funnest characters to write. I know Miranda loves drawing him. Mm-hmm. And
Well, Miranda, what is it specifically that draws you to that character artistically?
Aaron is so funny. I mean, he's like, I feel like when I was designing them, I was kind of trying to also make them opposite shapes too, or like just like differently shaped. And Aaron is very, he's very like long. He's very spindly. Like he's kind of like how kids, like when they're really young, like they're like made of rubber, you know, they feel like they can do anything. I really love Aaron. I love Abby too, because she reminds me of me when I was a kid. They're both great. I feel really good about the relationship, like what Dave was saying too about like how they love each other and their parents too. Like the whole family, it seems like they really love each other throughout the book.
There is actually a note we got, Miranda actually got through the art when we were originally doing the designs of Abby and Aaron. And like Aaron's a little bit taller than Abby, even though he's younger. Yeah. And that was like, that's like the genius of Miranda, because that's just like a weird physical thing. But you make something like that, and that makes sense when you think about, you know, if you had a little brother who's bigger than you and you're smaller, but you're supposed to be older and you're supposed to be like the mature one, you know, I think that like explains a lot of their dynamic. And it's something that it kind of tells you that without even knowing it. You can kind of just like pick up on how they stand next to each other and like that. And I think a lot of just like the visual gags and physical stuff that like Miranda's created in there is just like, none of that was on the page. That was all just Miranda just coming up with designs and all that. It was all just character names. And, you know, Abby's kind of anxious and she's, you know, really kind, but she's not sure of herself. And Aaron's just disgusting, you know, and Miranda just kind of just rolled with it, you know. And it's really, that's what's great about comics, is it's, you know, there's that trust of what I bring and what Miranda brings. And it's just creates this thing that probably couldn't exist if it was just either one of us, you know.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, totally.
So I wanted to ask you about a specific choice that you made, which obviously impacts a ton of the book, with a dog, Mayor, comedically, you can go in two directions. You can have him talk like a human being, or you could have him talk like a dog and just bark, bark, bark. So why have him talk like a human being? Why that choice?
Brandon, I don't know if there was anything we ever really I think we were just like,
I feel like Mere Good Boy kind of talks with Dave's voice. At least that's how I imagine it. Like, he says dude a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he's really chill, he's really cool. But he has to present professionally though, right? Like, because he's the mayor. So he has to talk. But he barks a lot too. And that's the story.
I also think
what
that
was the decision
kind of,
behind
I think just like, I think that's the easy joke to just like make him bark, or they just talk to him and it's like this funny thing. Whereas I think we found a way to make him, you know, he'll be in the middle of a conversation and just like take a nap or just fall asleep or just like run away. Like, to me that's so much funnier, because you're reading this book and you're thinking you're having a conversation with this person, right? And then like out of nowhere, he'll just like run away or fall asleep. Like, to me, that's way funnier than just him like barking and you have to like translate it or whatever. So like for us, we kind of just try to go for the, not so much even the least obvious joke, just something that makes us laugh personally. And like I said, even from the beginning, that was never a question. We were 100%, he would always just talk and nobody would acknowledge it. That's, I think, so much funnier too in situations like that. where he's a talking dog, but nobody cares. Like, he's just, you know, he's there hanging out, just like talking, doing a speech in a podium, you know. But for us creatively, I think that's just like so much more fun.
Yeah. Nat, what were you going to ask?
I was going to ask what the decision was between spelling the sound B O R K instead of B A R K.
That just sounds like a real bark, I think, is fork.
Yeah, bork, yeah. Bork. And it's like a tiny bark. Bork is like little dog's bork. There's a science to that. Thank you for noticing that, by the way.
See? All right, there is a science. So there was a scientific process towards determining the.
We took years to develop that. That's why the book took so long to come out. We've been working on it.
Who are your favorite dog scientists?
Yeah, that's
I appreciated in the back matter of the book, not only that you had the very typical but always very nice here's how to draw the characters thing, but you also had a section encouraging people, kids specifically, to get involved in the electoral process and how that happens. How did that come about, or was that part of the initial impetus of the book?
It was something that we all talked about, but I wrote and drew that comic. I think it was something like from the beginning, we really wanted there to be at least a little bit of like kind of just talking to the camera to say, hey, here's how you participate in democracy, you know? I think especially, like, obviously the last several years have been so charged politically, like we wanted to leave kids with some like really practical advice.
We felt it just like fit within the book. Yeah, so it's like Miranda, as she said, wrote and drew that, which I wish we would actually write that, because Aaron, like you it's almost like I think we're on the same wavelength that like you almost can't even tell, because it's like we understand the character so well. So Miranda like nailed that.
Future volumes, are you really going to get into conservative versus liberal politics, possibly through a mayor cat or something like that in another city?
Mayor Bad Boy.
Mayor Bad Boy. Cats are the original Bad Boys.
Yeah, I think with stuff like that,
he smokes.
Yeah, he vapes in it. Yeah. See if we get on that far. Yeah. Yeah, he like vapes and he has like a ninja motorcycle.
Don't give it all away right now.
We still got time. It's fine. We still have time. I think at least creatively, without giving too much away, with like the next couple of books we're doing. The first book was just kind of obviously setting up the world and developing it. And the cool thing with sequels is we're able to like live in it more, and we're able to kind of introduce more characters within that. So obviously, if you like the first book, I think you're going to like the other ones, because it's still sort of the same message about, you know, community and all that. But I think there's a broader scope within community about, you know, local business and family situations and all that stuff like that. So we're going to be able to really jump more into like some character stuff with the sequels and get to know the town more, which we're really, really excited about.
Cool. Yeah. And right now, those are scheduled for the next 2 years. You have one coming out in 2022 and one coming out in 2023. Are those still on schedule, or has COVID pandemic the stuff knocked that?
As far as we know, we're good. Yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah, awesome. It's obviously been like a challenge to do anything during this past year. But as far as I know, we're still on schedule.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And Mayor Goodboy, it's out now everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at your local bookstore or comic store.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on. Pleasure talking about the book. Congratulations. Okay. It's super fun.
This was awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Bye.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Mayor Goodboy. It's from Penguin Random House, and it's by Dave Scheidt and Miranda Harmon. Definitely check it out. Super fun. I gave this book to my son, and he was like, that's weird, dog mayor. But he read the whole thing instantly in one sitting, so there you go.
That's a pretty good review.
It is, from a seven-year-old. Mm-hmm. He liked it.
Well, that much, 224 pages of attention, that's
absolutely.
I mean, that's a solid endorsement.
Not to plus up my son or anything, but right
now. No, don't compliment your son or anything. I mean, whose job is that anyway? Yeah, I feel like you should sit back on that one.
If you like sons, I guess.
If you do plus up your son right now, I'm going to need to hear about some of his flaws too.
Yeah. Well, he did sob about being bored today in the middle of what I was trying to do work. And I was like, well, do you want to play with any of those three Lego sets you got yesterday or that Marvel game? And he was like, there's nothing to do. I'm bored.
All right. So what did he do that's good then? You were about to say not to plus up my son.
He's been reading Bone. He read the complete Bone. So
wow.
He's been eating that up and loves it. And I haven't read Bone. So he's beating me to that.
Double wow. Does Justin know that? I feel like that's his go-to.
I don't want to spoil anything, Nat, but you're going to be co-hosting with him next week.
Hey, at least we'll have something to talk about, which is to say Bone.
Wow!
Some people haven't done the required reading.
I think we have stuff to talk about, too, sometimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally. But that's a very important time in a child's life. I remember specifically how, like staying up with, like, a flashlight and reading, like, because, you know, lights off had happened an hour ago, but I wasn't done with the volume of Bone.
You were a kid in the 1950s, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I use my Boy Scout training to do a little tent, and then I actually it wasn't actually a flashlight; it was a fire that I started right there with my tinderbox, and
right on your bed.
Used it to read the latest Davy Crockett comic books.
Oh man, those were very racist.
Oh yeah. I got a racism badge for it though, so it was a different time.
Good for you. You know what happens at a different time is our audience questions, which we're going to move over to right now. And for audience questions, this is pretty straightforward. All you guys got to do is you got to drop a question over in Ask a Question here on Crowdcast or on YouTube. Just drop something in the comments. Questions about anything, geek stuff, Marvel stuff, DC stuff, love stuff, advice.
Dating advice. Alex always says dating advice and
nobody
no one ever asks dating questions.
Nobody,
I'm good at this.
For 15 years
Alex
I've been wanting
married.
To give up.
He's a successful romantic.
I am. I've had two children.
Comic book related dating question.
Ask me how baby made. I'll tell you. Well, I'll tell you one thing though, actually, Nat. If you do want baby made, you're going to probably want to turn to this week's sponsor, which is Manscaped and the Performance Package 4.0. You're going to want to trim that stuff down in order to get baby made, you know? And they have
make more obvious junk, be baby make. Make junk prominent.
Yes, so make. Manscaped, the Performance Package 4.0, there are a lot of different things that you get in this package. You get the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer Briefs, a travel bag to hold everything in, and also a manual on how baby made, which is very nice. I add that in personally. They don't add that, but
yeah, you actually have to text. Oh, you have to drop Alex a tweet with your address because, and then show him proof of purchase because they've actually specifically said they won't do that.
Right. Definitely after this ad,
because they don't know how babies are made. To be clear.
Right. They told me they were like, "Hey, I'm sorry, we're not including that in the copy." And I was like, "Got it. You don't know how baby made. I'll tell you later." But I do know how the Lawnmower 4.0 is made because it's got a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, and a travel lock. It's even waterproof. It also has a 4,000K LED spotlight that you can use if you're reading your dirty comics late at night in your bed like Nat used to back in the 1940s, I believe, when you were a kid.
Yeah, let's keep backing it up.
Yeah, we'll end up at the 1800s at some point with a flashlight.
Yeah, I was looking at woodcuts. I was looking at sequential art in the 1800s. I was looking at a triptych painting and trying to infer a narrative. All right, go on.
The original comics were cave paintings.
Exactly. No, that's actually true.
That is, I know.
I agree with you on that.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a good joke. Because it has a historical base.
It's true. Every good joke is based in truth. So the Performance Package 4.0 also has a weed whacker. That is also waterproof. Has a 9,000 RPM motor, so you can run races with your lawnmower 4.0. See which one is faster. Tell you what, it's the weed whacker. It's a whole 2,000 RPM faster. But put them on the floor. See which one gets past the line or to your wife first or whatever. She's like, come on, which one of you loves me more?
This is how babies are made, right? Just to be clear, we're still on that topic. Okay, that's how baby made. Wife, judge which device faster.
Don't forget about the Crop Preserver ball deodorant or the Crop Reviver or the bag or the boxers or any of that good stuff. But I'll tell you what, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDE20 at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you. Wow. And that last part makes a lot more sense if you read the rest of the copy instead of just riff on it. But
well, we made a choice, and I think
and
there's
we're stuck
pros
with it.
Cons to either one. You know, if you've read Judith Butler, you understand that all gender is a performance. So why not embrace your performance of masculinity by referring to your genitals with a series of farming metaphors? Manscaped, with our promo code, FANSIDED20, Dash Judith Butler at checkout.
I'll tell you what, since we started doing these Manscaped ads, every time I go to YouTube now, it's a Manscaped ad. Every single time, right on the front page. It's very weird. I think it's listening.
Yeah. It's like when you go to buy something and then you do buy it and then they're like, hey, you know what you might like? This thing you searched for. And you're like, yeah, no, I did buy it already though. So yeah, let me get a second lawnmower. You're right.
I keep getting that from Pinterest. Constantly they're sending me emails. Maybe it's not Pinterest. Maybe I'm thinking something else. But I definitely am getting a lot of emails like, hey, people in your area are really interested in buying book.
Yeah. There's the thing that you already bought. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, I already got that. Let's go to some questions here.
Good.
This is a good one right off for you. This is from Stanley over on YouTube. Nat is really great. What is his backstory?
Good question. Oh.
What is his back? Great question mark. What is his backstory with the show? Nat, what is your backstory with the show other than you brought a lime one time and never left?
That's true. This is that same lime from 15 mm-hmm. years ago. The truth of the matter is that I was a huge comic book fan in high school, kind of stopped reading in college, got back into it in my early 20s. I was doing a comedy show called The Moon that was sponsored by Forbidden Planet Comics, and I got a big fat discount and started reading comic books again. And I started looking for comic book podcasts, and I started listening to this one, not aware of the fact that I had already met Alex and Justin at other times, went to the live show, I believe when it was at Fontana's, shook Justin's hand afterwards and said, hey, that was a really great show. I've been listening to the podcast. My name is Nat. And Justin said, we've met. You did my other comedy show because I'm a stand-up comedian. And I'd already performed at Justin's comedy show, Gentrify, at the Brooklyn Lyceum, to which I was like, oh, yeah, there were like six hosts. I'm sorry, I forgot. And then Alex, you and I also had worked together on the ECNY Awards, which I had not. I don't think I'd put that together unless I'm getting the chronology wrong. And I became a regular at the show, big fan. And I don't know, I befriended Pete somewhere along the way there too. Oh, I studied improv befriended? With Pete LePage.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, it's sort of a like Professor X and Magneto. The greatest rivalries come from a basis of friendship.
Yeah, you have a real chess match thing going on, is I think what's happening.
Yeah, I bet Pete and I both are good at chess. I think that's a good way of looking at it. So I kind of individually had relationships with all three hosts, but I'm also just a huge comic book fan and a fan of the show. And I think I just attended until they were like, all right, you're here anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. There mm-hmm. you go. That's the story. Let's go here to the crowdcast for some questions. Ooh, Randolph, dating advice. What is the best nerdy movie for a first date? That's love it. Randolph, thank you so much for listening to us and asking a dating question. I love it. I'm trying to remember which podcast I mentioned this on. I think this was our Stargirl podcast that's posting later tonight. This is not a good answer because I've actually never seen this movie. But okay. In college, I rented Gattaca and invited a girl over. I know.
What?
Terrible. And proceeded to watch Gattaca with her with my glasses off because I was like, what if we kiss? And then my glasses are on and we like, I don't know, what do I do with my glasses? This was very early in my dating life. So
how old are you in this story?
Too old for that to be a question, but I definitely left my glasses off, could not tell what was going on with Gattaca. We did end up kissing. So as far as I'm concerned, Gattaca, very romantic movie, I think.
Gattaca's your answer. Okay, I know this is not what we want, but also a friend of mine once took someone on a first date to see Spotlight in theaters. He didn't know what it was about. He said he just heard it was like a critically acclaimed movie and everyone's going to see Spotlight, so they should go see it together. It's about child sex abuse, if you haven't seen it. These are all bad answers. The answer to your question is Ghost World, adapted from the Daniel Klaus comic. It's very romantic. Wow. It's also adapted from a comic book. You can, if you're dating someone who's not in comic books, you can introduce them to comic books through the naturalistic narratives of Dan Klaus. And if it is a comic book fan, well, they've probably seen it already, but it's a great movie to watch anyway, and it's got a really good Steve Buscemi performance in it, and it's a lot of heart. Is that geeky enough? Or
no, I think that pretty much works. That's definitely a specific type of geeky, but I think it's good. Mm-hmm. I'd also
Thor 2,
I mean,
The Dark World.
Well, I mean, this is also one of my favorite movies, but I'd throw out Princess Bride as well because I think it's super romantic. It's maybe not exactly geeky, but it's definitely like it's a fantasy movie, and
it's in that world.
Yeah, and you could probably take a date to see it as like, I'm sure there's some sort of talk back screenings or something like that where everybody does the whole Rocky Horror thing going on. So that might be.
Oh, I have a new answer, though.
What's your new answer?
Oh, well, this is true. On the maybe second time I ever hung out with my girlfriend, she mentioned that one of her favorite movies was The Iron Giant, which is a movie that I have a framed poster of on my wall that I got at New York Comic Con. And we did not watch that together on an early date, but we united over love of that movie. And I think The Iron Giant is, again, not like specifically a comic book movie, but falling. It's definitely like respectful of that culture. Well, I mean, it's about a comic book fan in the 50s, too. It's got a kind of like a golden age feeling to it.
Vin Diesel in it. He's the voice of Groot as well.
Ladies love the voice of Vin Diesel. And if you want to get your lady in the mood, I think the guttural robotic grunting of Vin Diesel is.
If you want to start a relationship a quarter mile at a time, Vin Diesel's voice. That's the place to go. Also, Pitch Black.
It's very...
Pitch Black, very romantic movie as well. Chronicles of Riddick. Those are all romantic movies that I might mention.
Fast 7.
Boiler Room.
What's the one where he's like a nanny, or is that, am I thinking of The Rock?
I'm sure they've all been nannies.
The Tooth Fairy starring The Rock.
They've all been nannies at different times.
The Pacifier. Thank you, Kevin, in the comments.
For action stars, there are two things that you need to do. One is be a nanny in a movie at some point, because it's funny. They're dealing with kids. And the other one is fight yourself.
You gotta fight yourself, like a younger robotic version of yourself, for sure.
What they gotta do is they gotta do like a nanny versus nanny thing, where it's, I don't know, who's a good
kindergarten
one?
Cop versus the
Anthony
pacifier.
Mackie versus Anthony Mackie. So it's the same. It's two Anthony Mackies. They're both nannies, and they end up fighting. That's the ultimate action movie.
Yes. I'm nodding for the audio podcast. I'm just agreeing. There's nothing.
Move
to
on.
Add.
I am done. All right, let's move back to YouTube because we have a couple of things happening over here. Nelson Martinez says, what are some good TV shows you're currently or recently checked out and anything coming out soon that you're looking forward to? Well, Nelson, before I go to Nat for this, I will mention if you are a Patreon subscriber on this week's Week in Geek, you're going to get my exclusive fall TV preview where I run down a bunch of things that are coming throughout the fall and tease some things that I'm definitely breaking an embargo on, but don't tell anybody, but there you go. But that all said, Nat, what have you been watching or what are you excited to check out on TV?
I've been watching Evil on Paramount Plus.
Oh,
I'm late to it, but I'm getting into it. As I said to Alex earlier, I almost turned it off in like the first 10 minutes. Not because it was bad. It just was not the mood I was into. And there's a lot of stabbing early on. It's like primetime TV appropriate violence, but there's just a lot of knife sounds and blood. And I was not in the mood for it. But I'm glad I stuck it out. It's an interesting show. I love the cast. Mike Coulter, I will say, still a little stiff, but very charming. And you promised me that they use him well as the show goes on. So
if
I'm
you
very
haven't
much
seen
intrigued.
The show, it's Mike Coulter plays a junior priest or priest in training. I don't actually remember what his position is. Who is
he's 2 out of 5 years into a training program to become a priest.
Yes, and he is tasked with looking into potentially supernatural mysteries, things of potential exorcisms, essentially, to evaluate them, whether they are real or not, and then bring it back to the church. And then the church can say, okay, we're going to go forward with an exorcism or not. And so he recruits two other people, a tech guy played by Asif Manvi and Katya Herbers, who's the skeptic. So it's a very X-Files-y setup there. But the stuff that happens, the first episode... Stick with it. Like, the first episode is very a setup episode. Like you're saying, I agree. Mike Coulter, very weird and staccato in his delivery. Like, he's like, I'm delivering lines right now, even though he's a ridiculously
handsome
man.
He always makes a really, like charming face when he does the lines. And he's just so incredibly handsome that you're like, he's flirting with me. It's okay if he's not good at acting. And then you're like, wait, he's on. Yeah, no, he is acting and he's not flirting with me. You have to remember that.
Yeah.
But
they do figure out better how to use him pretty quickly in the series. And it's legitimately a terrifying show. Like, it's a funny show, but there are episodes there that I had actual nightmares off of watching, even though they break the tension a lot of the time with humor. So it's weird, it's funny. Like I said, it's on Paramount Plus. I think they just finished the second season.
No, season 3 is out on Paramount Plus now, or it has been airing on Paramount. I think they're releasing it weekly, like as if it were.
No, it's season 2. They just had a break in it.
Oh, it's 2. Oh, okay. That's why I was confused.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But yeah, very good stuff. The other stuff I'll recommend that's out right now, Heels on Stars. I feel like I've talked about this a bunch of times. I know a lot of people don't have Stars, but this is a small town wrestling drama. It's kind of like Friday Night Lights, but with wrestling, sort of. stars Stephen Amell from Arrow, Alexander Ludwig from Vikings, and they're two brothers, and one of them plays the heel on stage, the other is the face. Are they that way in real life? I'll let you figure it out.
Wow.
But it's from Michael Waldron, who is the showrunner of Loki. It was actually one of the first things that he wrote that got him notice. Mike O'Malley is the main showrunner, like he did the day-to-day operations of it. And I've seen the whole first season. It crushes it in the finale. I'm not into wrestling at all. This is definitely like completely drew me in. I've talked to people who are into super into wrestling, and they've loved it as well. So super lot of heart, a lot of humor, and the fights are awesome, like really good. It's the sort of thing, and I hesitate to say this for anybody who is a wrestling fan, but the thing that kind of pushes me off of wrestling sometimes is the idea that like they're doing a great job of selling it, but I know that they've scripted it out.
Mm-hmm.
But are kind of pretending that it's real, but are also, you know, there's a little bit of improv and whatever.
But at least it takes forever for anything to happen, always.
Yes, versus this, which I know is scripted, so I think it gets past that level already, even though they really are going for the crests and builds of a wrestling match in there. They've worked with local wrestling people to make it feel very authentic. So it kind of gets past that hump for me. I don't know if it'll do it for other people, but I think it's really good. And the other one that I'll mention is What We Do in the Shadows on FX is back, and that show is great. It's a vampire comedy. Oh. Super, super fun. Definitely check it out.
One of my absolute favorites. I mean, watch the movie if you haven't seen it. It's fantastic. And What We Do in the Shadows, season one is sort of a continuation of the movie. The characters are not the same characters, but they have sort of the same dynamic. They cast people who look like the ones from the movie. But season two, there are episodes in that I, you know, people say there's only so many stories told. There are things that happen in season two, and it's a comedy, where I was just like, I never thought of that. I've never seen anyone do this before. I've never seen this concept. And then that premise will be the first 4 minutes of the episode, and then it goes completely wild from there. It's so good. And and if I can throw in one more show that I am watching right now, I've seen it before, but I've been watching it again recently, is Three Busy Debras. It's a sort of sketch absurdist comedy show about three extremely wealthy women that aired on Adult Swim. They're 11-minute episodes. It's impossible to explain. Just watch the pilot. It's very funny. It's one of the funniest shows I've seen in a while.
Awesome. We got one here on Crowdcast from Eduardo. Alex, anything you want to say in a safe Justin and Pete-free environment? Yes, I miss them. On a more serious note, any expectations based on the Suicide Squad disappointment and Shang-Chi success situation, are we now doomed never to have simultaneous streaming releases? So I don't know if you have opinion on this, Nat, necessarily, but just to give people the background on this, the exactly as Eduardo lays out, Suicide Squad definitely underperformed. It wasn't the only movie. It's box office stuff is confusing because Suicide Squad came out. Everyone was like, massive disappointment. The next week, Free Guy came out. They were like, huge success. They made basically the same exact amount of money 2 weekends in a row, to the point that I looked at that. I was like, this is just how much money movies can make right now. Delta variant cases are rising. People are concerned about going to the theater. That's just what it is. Then Shang-Chi comes out this weekend. I think there was Candyman did fine, well for a horror movie, and something else did okay. And then Shang-Chi comes out, of course, and dominates again for pandemic times, one of the lowest Marvel openings ever, but still, I think the biggest Labor Day opening ever. The first thing that you could point to there that I think everybody's missing is, well, probably not everybody listening to this show, but it's a Marvel movie. And Marvel movies are the exception that prove the rule every single time out of the gate. They do incredibly. I don't think you could draw any lessons from that. The only lesson that could be drawn that I do think is an unfortunate lesson is Sony immediately came out and said, hey, great news about that Shang-Chi thing. We're going to move Venom up 2 weeks to October 1st instead of October 15th. So people could see that earlier. And that also is going to continue to only be theatrical, no streaming. So I think they know, yes, people are going to look at that as a Marvel movie. That's how that's going to work. But I'm very doubtful that movies are back, baby. But I think, to the point Eduardo is making, that is how the movie studios are going to see it for, I'd say for better or for worse, but for worse.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's actually more of a reflection of the fact that the MCU just has momentum. Like, I feel like the DC movies, they have their diehards. You meet them on the internet sometimes. They usually have weird opinions about crypto and other associated things. You know, I don't know who these people are, but they, I know that DC and live action movie stands do exist, but it's just not the cultural phenomenon. Like, I feel like for the general public, a DC movie is treated with some skepticism. Like, what is this? Who are these guys? Whereas in like the next installment in the MCU, which Shang-Chi could be a very who is this guy kind of reaction had it happened 10 years ago. But I think the fact that it is the, especially after we waited a long time, I almost think it was beneficial for the MCU, because if you look at the slate right after Infinity War, Endgame rather, they weren't exactly the highest hyped movies. But I think we've waited long enough now that people are like, MCU is back, finally, Marvel movies, and people are maybe more likely to go to see a Shang-Chi movie than they would have been had it just come out dutifully 6 months after or 12 months after Endgame.
Yeah, but I think now if you look at the schedule, and I don't have the full movie schedule in front of me, because everybody is rabbit-brained or chicken-brained, whatever, you know, short memory thing you want to call out necessarily. Goldfish brain. That was the correct thing. Thank you. So Shang-Chi came out.
They're all
that
stupid,
dominated.
Don't worry.
The studios are going to be like, movies are back, baby! And then we're going to have a month of movies where they're going to be like, ooh, is the box office in trouble or theaters in trouble? Then Venom comes out at the beginning of October. They're going to be like, movies are back, baby! And then we're going to get another month where they're going to be like, ooh, Dune really underperformed, probably because it's also streaming on HBO Max. This is really bad. And then November, you're going to have some movie, probably Eternals, that's going to do the same thing. They'll be like, wow, movies are back! They're never going to learn. Never. So to the short answer to your question is, yes, we are doomed for this pattern forever, because movie studios don't recognize the fact that people are dying in the world and they need to provide other options that are better and safer for people. It sucks.
Yeah, that's not great. And I also think that, like, I think that it's kind of absurd to discuss, like, what are movies going to be? Because it's this, you know, this is a totally unprecedented territory, this like simultaneous streaming and theatrical release. And not only is like that new, but every instance of when that happens, the COVID crisis is at a different. So like, you know, I saw Black Widow in theater and I feel like, you know, a few months earlier, I definitely wouldn't have seen a movie in theaters. It's possible that a month from now, I won't be comfortable, you know, depending on where New York was at with the level of vaccinations. Right when I got vaccinated, a lot of people still weren't. I wouldn't have seen a movie in theaters then. So it's not even like, oh, how is this doing for a pandemic release, or how is this doing for a post-vaccines release? It's like every movie comes out in a different America, like a different environment. There's no way of comparing them to each other, except to say that MCU movies are just kind of have like, you know, their cars on a freight train that's already moving downhill. So, yeah, throw a few bodies on the tracks, they're going to keep moving. Well, I like that metaphor.
That is a dark metaphor, but it's 100% correct. We have a bunch of stuff stacking up here on YouTube. So let me move over here. Radlam says, I'm moving this weekend. Do you have any awful moving stories? Sure. My short one is I moved from the city to Brooklyn and a guy stole my credit card and used it. That was pretty bad. Luckily, I got reimbursed for most of the stuff and caught it pretty quickly, but that was a huge bummer. What about you, Nat? Any bad moving stories?
Well, in college, I think I lived in 11 apartments in 4 years. And then after that, I lived in the same apartment for a decade, just out of pure spite for having had to move so many times. So I don't have, it's not a great story. It's moving sucks, and stay where you are till you die.
More on a comics bent. This is from Scott Carpenter, also on YouTube. Favorite Hickman X-Men title that has ended? I was really getting into Way of X. Hope it comes back before Onslaught.
X-Factor.
X-Factor?
That was a huge mistake. I think it was underperforming. They were like one-fifth of the way through everything that they were setting up in X-Factor. Such an interesting story. Started with a Mojoverse story. That's the first Mojoverse story I've seen since the 80s that was even relevant. Like, I feel like the Mojoverse was created when, like, cable became a thing. Not the character, television cable. Like, oh, there's more that you can watch. People are obsessed. The MTV generation has no attention span. Mojo was originally a, like, exaggeration of that world, right? Like, this is a future or a world where entertainment rules everything. And then recent Mojo stories have just sort of been, like, culturally time stamped in the 80s, so they didn't work. This was the first one that was like, it's about streamers. It's about what if everyone had a stream all the time. Everyone has drones, all these characters, and like whatever you can do, it's like the attention economy, whatever you can do to draw the most people to your stream. It was such a like brilliant and relevant take on the Mojoverse. And they definitely, you know, went in a different direction after that, brought different characters in. But I thought they had set up such an interesting team. They barely solved the mystery of what happened to Prodigy. Like the series just ended so abruptly. I'm sure there was an executive decision. It wasn't selling as much, but it's kind of a frustrating thing when you know, like I said earlier in the show, you basically have to read every title in order to follow the X books right now. And I feel like at that point, you almost need to float some lower selling books just to keep them in the overall narrative, because I feel like that narrative and what's happening with all those characters just kind of is a dangling thread. And I know they're all coming back in Trial of Magneto and Inferno, but I feel like that book ended. It's one of those cancellations that just didn't even have time to wrap up the current arc. Like they hit the Hellfire Gala. They kind of went, reflected that. And then they're like, well, we'll see what happens. And you can tell that the writers, you know, there's some narration at the end of the final issue that the writers are just sort of like, well, we wish it weren't happening either, but oh well.
This is a little bit of a cheat, but I'm going to work off a comment here from Architectural Film Panels and Columns. Says, I don't think anything's topped the initial House of X and Powers of 10 stories. Hickman's X-Men run was an even but fun, fell off after New Mutants after a bit. But this is pivoting off of something we were talking about, I think, last week on the live show, that I just haven't felt the same energy since House of X Powers of 10. You know, that I've really liked a lot of these titles, but that had a necessary nature to reading those books just by the amount that it was focused that I wish we could get back to. And I'm repeating myself here. I understand the economic reasons that they're not. You know, we talked to Jordan D. White, the editor, about this, and he was like, we were terrified to only publish one X-Men title a week. What were we going to do financially? How can we do that? We can't afford to do that. And ultimately, they did blow out the X-Men line again. A lot of the stuff is really quality. But because they've blown it out, as a reader, it becomes, this is nice across the board, and sort of evens out critically in my mind versus that initial run that felt just, I have to read this. This is the first thing that I'm reading every single week.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, I think I'm a little more caught up in them than you are. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bigger fan of that style of storytelling. I feel like, you know, it's interesting. I recently went back and read a lot of just the Hickman X-Men book. And I you know, when I was reading it, I was reading four other books a week at least. And the story kind of intertwines there. And I was actually surprised how much linear progression there is in the Hickman X-Men book, because, you know, the story jumps into X-Factor and Professor X gets attacked, all these things happen. So I was like, oh, it's like, it's one weaving storyline. It's like winding. But I actually realized that if you read the Hickman book linearly without reading the tie-in books, it actually tells a very, you know, the focus of the story from House of X Powers of 10, which is essentially this anti-rise of AI that, you know, will replace, like, you know, the rise of Nimrod. This is the thing that they're trying to prevent, mostly. That story has so much more momentum if you just read straight from House of X into X-Men number one and go straight forward from there through the X-Men books. It just kind of, what would happen to me is every time a new Hickman X-Men book would come around, I'd be like, what was happening last? Like, because sometimes they just felt like all different anecdotes. And there is that one that just looks like a 90s X-Men book and they go into space and fight some aliens. But most of them really are a reflection of the story that came out of House of X. And to kind of answer the question in a different way, I was bummed that Hickman stopped writing the main title. I know he's doing Inferno. Yeah. He's been known to write multiple books a month. So I wanted him to do both. He's also known for falling way behind on event books. So maybe, you know, maybe it was a good decision, but it was weird to me to replace it with, I like the Jerry Dugan X-Men number one, but that to me feels like 90s X-Factor. Like, it's a battle team. They're going on missions. They're fighting aliens. They got the classic style costumes. They've got a new base. It doesn't feel at all to me like a replacement for the Hickman X-Men series, which was very much a Hickman style. Like, everything is deeply in the past tense. It's mythological. It's about like this incredibly like wide view of the X-Men universe. I felt like there was room for both of those. Just call the Jerry Dugan book, I mean, you can't call it X-Factor because there is an X-Factor, but like, I don't know, New X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, you know, the name's not important, but I thought there was room for both of those books. So I'm wondering where the main mythology storytelling is going to happen, because it seems like the Dugan book is all about this like one galactic casino storyline right now.
Well, it sounds like nowhere and everywhere, right? I mean, I'm sure plans will change in a year, but you have Hickman jumping off of it at this point, wrapping up his run, leaving X-Men for good. I think they've started talking about Inferno as his final X-Men story pretty definitively. And he said, yeah, everybody kind of wants to stay in this first act place that I left them. So who knows where it was going in Act 2? Who knows where it was going in Act 3? But this whole idea of mutants building a new society on Krakoa and Araco. And yeah. Also Mars now.
Mars is Araco.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. They...
Why is that hard to remember? There was Okara. It was split by Surtur into two separate islands, Araco and Krakoa. Araco spent roughly 1,000 years in a demonic nether realm named Amenth, where they were sort of like infiltrated by demons and eventually became like synonymous with it. They sort of invaded back into our reality through the vile kingdoms of vile courts of other worlds surrounding, you know, the Starlight Citadel. And then during X of Swords, of course, the sword base destroyed all the demons of Amenth and then brought Araco back to Earth. But it didn't want to bond with Krakoa again because things had changed over time. So they terraformed Mars and teleported Araco to Mars. And Mars has now become renamed Araco. It's a mutant society. I don't see why that's hard to follow.
So I appreciate you saying all that, but the entire time in my head, I was just thinking, oh, Krakoa, oh, I wanna go. That's it. I'll work out the rest of it later on, but I appreciate
it. Yeah, I want the full... By the time this podcast gets posted, there has to be like a post-credits, like 3.5-minute version of the song.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. We got a couple more questions here. This is from Randolph. Are either of you excited for any of the upcoming comic book video games, Suicide Squad, Gotham Knights, Midnight Suns? I don't have a lot of time to play video games.
What, do you got kids or something?
Yeah. Well, my son and I
played... the kid thinks it's boring, I heard. Mm-hmm.
Well, to give you an idea of the video games I can play, this weekend we played a lot of Poke Park, which is Pikachu goes around a Pokemon theme park and becomes friends with other Pokemon and gets crystal shards and saves everybody through the power of friendship. Okay. Fun game. He loved it. But I'm probably not going to play Gotham Knights, where I assume Nightwing kills some dudes.
Unclear with how murderous that game's going to be. It looks pretty dark. I'm a little out of the loop as a gamer, but I did read the original Gotham Knights series pretty religiously, and I was a huge fan of the Batman books when that was first coming out. I want to say like 2000 when the first Gotham Knights series launched. It was like right after No Man's Land, and when they were like, Batman's got too many sidekicks. What are we going to do? What are we doing about this? And then they're like, put them all in one book. That's actually the point. He's lonely, but he surrounds himself with people. Make a whole book about that rather than being like, we kind of just cram too many people in one universe. But that series is really good, or at least I loved it at the time. I've reread it and I think it holds up maybe not as obsessively as when I was a teenager, but I'm excited to see how that plays out in a video game form. And I don't think it's going to be the post-crisis, pre-New 52 versions of those characters necessarily, but I don't know. I've always had a place in my heart for that, like that book and those characters. So I'm excited to check that one out.
Yeah, we got another question here. This is from Kevin. Who's the Marvel character you're most surprised hasn't been used or announced for the MCU? Also, quiz. So Kevin has been doing the secret quiz. Kevin, I don't know if Nat is going to do it. We'll wait until
I don't know what he's referring to.
Okay, until Pete and Justin get back. So that'll probably actually be 2 weeks when both of them are back. But that all said, let's answer the first part of the question. Who's the Marvel character you're most surprised hasn't been used or announced for the MCU?
I can say who I want to see, but I was going to say Galactus, but I'm actually not surprised because I think that they're like increasing the scale, you know, Thanos being the cosmic big bad, and you have Ronan the Accuser in there, who's like a pretty powerful but like, you know, villain, but then the step up is Thanos, and then you know, I feel like going to Kang from there, it's like, well, he's a master of the multiverse. He can travel through time. Like, that supersedes Thanos' power over reality. As we all know, the Infinity Gauntlet only works in the within the reality where those Infinity Stones are found. Yes. So you bring him into another reality. You're wearing a nice glove, buddy. Sell it at a pawn shop, sure. But so, you know, Kang far more powerful. You could argue that Kang is more powerful than Galactus or whatever. But I feel like they're being very careful about escalating the threats. Doctor Doom is one. Yeah. Again, I'm focused on villains, and I know Doctor Doom was sort of in a number of failed Fantastic Four movies, but that seems like such a good villain, such an obvious choice. The you know, sovereign nation part where he's sort of like a lawful neutral character, where he everything he does is about protecting, you know, Latveria. So he's not necessarily evil. He's manipulative. You know, he's a planner, and I think he's such an interesting villain with where he's like a cold and analytical, but also has this deeply emotional background, where I feel like that would be such a good villain to insert into the MCU at some point. I guess they'll probably wait until they bring the Fantastic Four in. It seems pretty obvious, but
yeah, I was going to call out Doctor Doom as well, and I think there's ways of bringing in Doctor Doom without the Fantastic Four, at least teasing him. It's the sort of thing where you have somebody mention,
be like, "Nice mask, stupid."
Yep, that's exactly what I was
teasing him.
Yeah. I get it.
Well, anyway, what was the point you were making?
I'm honestly not sure, but I do think you could bring him on without the Fantastic Four movie. But I also understand why they are waiting for that. A couple of things.
How would you introduce him though? Like, what would he be the?
I don't know. Like, at a delegation or something, right?
Right, we go to the UN, and there's just a bunch of normal guys and one man in a metal mask,
yeah,
echoing voice from the inside of the helmet.
Or you slowly tease it out. You announce, like, there's some news footage from Latveria, and you have a guy in the distance in a cloak, and you can't quite tell who it is, and
fans
lose their mind. You know, I think I'm for it. A couple of things that people mentioned here: Nova. They had the Nova Core in Guardians of the Galaxy.
We've seen like 4,000 Novas.
Yeah, there's been a lot of
them. Ewan's Richard Rider.
Richard Rider or Sam Alexander or something like that. Yeah. Sam Alexander seems like almost a no-brainer for a Disney Plus series at some point. Squirrel Girl and Howard the Duck. Howard the Duck was in Guardians of the Galaxy and also
And Marvel's What If.
There you go. So Edward Doherty says Green Goblin hasn't been in any of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies yet. I will point you to Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, did you not see the Green Goblin bomb rolling down the highway?
Yeah, I mean, do we want to talk about...
No follow-up to that. But
no follow-ups. Do we want to talk about potential spoilers or anything? Or...
I mean, I'm speculating based on the trailer. That's clearly... Sure. There's clearly... I mean, Dr. Octopus, but there's evidence of other villains in there. And also, like, I am not like... I'm not like you people. I try to avoid internet chatter about a movie I'm definitely about to see. And even I know that there's going to be a lot of the... Spider-Man villains that are in the other two instances that are in this too.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the bomb seemed like proof to me, is all.
Exactly. Yes, either that or it's a weird green ball and somebody's going to be like, play it through.
Yeah. We're playing a future golf which exists in this universe. It's normal to all of us. And someone's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it's normal. It's normal to me too.
This is 2025. I don't know if you remember. We hardly ever mention it. It's super weird, but all of these movies take place in the future. Shang-Chi, for example, takes place in the future. Okay, bye.
All the cars look like they do in your world, but it's actually 3 years or 4 years later.
Very weird.
Hey, do you think that they're going to give the Green Goblin the same stupid mask as in the Tobey Maguire movies? Or have we found a way to make
that if we're going to straight up talk about this, the rumor is, and toot away if you don't want to know anything about No Way Home, but the very strong rumor. Okay. The very strong rumor is that Willem Dafoe is coming back as the Green Goblin. Like, that's...
I mean, that would rule.
Yes, that would rule. And I think, this is just pure speculation on my part, but I think part of the reason they have not revealed him beyond they don't want to spoil everything about the movie is I think he probably will have the traditional Green Goblin costume, right? In some way, and not the metallic Power Ranger costume from the movies.
Yeah, I mean, the costume in the movies, I love his performance. The costume is very silly. I mean, that's kind of the point, but also it was one of those early in the current phase of comic book movies, like adaptations where they didn't quite know how Tim Burton-y to go and how naturalistic to go, right? A lot of the Tobey Maguire one is more naturalistic, Sam Raimi, I should say. But the Green Goblin costume was clearly a choice as to how to interpret a Silver Age costume. Mm-hmm. So when you say the costume from the comics, I'm curious, how do you envision that? Is it cloth? Is it armor? Is his face all fucked up from the goblin serum?
So Edward over here says, no, they want nostalgia. It'll be the same costume. I could see a scenario where he comes through whatever portal or however these villains are coming through with the traditional metallic costume and then gets an upgrade, you know, whether it's
the portal melted my mask. Yeah. I gotta pull it off.
There we go.
Oh, it melted in a way that's much cooler. Oh no.
It looks awesome now.
Or it fuses to his face and he's like, I actually like this.
I could see they could do something like with Mysterio, right? With Jake Gyllenhaal's Mysterio, where you could tell it was almost a classic Mysterio costume, but it was upgraded for the movies. Out, yeah, exactly. So,
well, also with Gyllenhaal, they definitely did a, like, how do you introduce this? Like, I think it works for the Mysterio character. I don't think you can do this for everyone, where it's like one of the early superhero movie tropes. And again, early of this phase is like, you know, especially in your X-Men and Spider, like showing the original costume and be like, huh, I'd never wear that thing. You know, like the sort of campy nod to, you know, Jessica Jones did it. A million of them have done it. But I wonder if, like, you know, Mysterio, I thought that really worked because of the, I mean, I guess spoilers for Far From Home. Tune out for 20 seconds if you haven't seen Far From Home, but you didn't already tune out for these other spoilers. But it's a fake out, right? Like, and Mysterio is a big theatrical, like, dramatic actor character. That's what's so fun about him. That, like, I think that really works for that character. I wouldn't love it if every villain was like, get it? This is stupid, right? Or like fear mongering or whatever. Yeah. Like, another example would be the original Mandarin. The Mandarin is a rumor, essentially. You know, that's another interpretation of it, but I don't think you can do that every time.
If we want to get into it, though, talking about the different villains that they've had in the Spider-Man movies, the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, the Vulture is definitely updated. Obviously, it's Michael Keaton. It's not an old bald man flying around in a tight green suit for no particular reason.
That is
but
true.
But it looks cool. Like, it's a very cool Vulture suit that he has throughout that movie, and it's pretty terrifying. Same thing with the Mysterio thing, like you're talking about, where it has that sense of Mysterio from the comics while still being sleeker and more interesting and not embarrassing to look at. So I think whatever they bring in, you know, they showed off Doc Ock already, and that's just Alfred Molina in a trench coat with horrifying robot arms. That already looks pretty neat. But if you have the other ones, we already know that they're probably... Electro is in it. Jamie Foxx is in it as Electro. We know that. He's already talking.
We know that from casting, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. But we
Which
also
is
know that
a choice, but yes. Okay.
Well, but we also know that he's going to look different. Like, if you look at the trailer, there is regular yellow lightning coming out in the middle of the trailer. My suspicion there is you're going to have Jamie Foxx as Electro, but it's going to be probably not the big bolts coming off of his face, but it's going to be a little more traditional Electro versus the blue Electro from the Amazing Spider-Man movies. Sandman already looks cool. He's probably showing up in this movie as well, based on...
Do we know if it's Thomas Hayden Church?
We don't. We do know that there seems to be giant sand creatures in the trailer, but that's pretty much it. And there's probably one more to round out the Sinister Six. Certainly looks like the Lizard, I believe, from the trailer, if you, like, really look at the footage there at one point. But Green Goblin is the big one, like we're talking about, and I do think they're going to make an effort to show off that original costume, but tweak it in some way and make it look better for the 20, 30? How old is the Spider-Man movie? I don't even know at this point. I guess
the,
20
the
years.
First one?
Yeah, 20 years of movies that have happened in between where things have really changed.
I think like 22, right? Was it 2000 or 2001? Because it was edited after 9/11 to add like more patriotism, and he lands on a giant American flag in the end of the movie. And he goes, Osama bin Laden, you're next, if I recall correctly.
Man,
he looks directly into the camera.
It ties into the backstories in the current Marvel comic books that are coming out this week that are all paying tribute to 20 years of 9/11.
Oh, is that a real thing they're doing?
Yeah, that's a real thing. I don't love it.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, boy.
And on that bummer of a note, I think we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Nat Townsend.
What? What a twist.
And Nat.
All right. Yeah. What's up, Alex?
Well, all I was going to say is we don't have somebody in advance. So if you want to call out for somebody to the crown, go for it.
I mean, I'm well known as a first-hand up guy myself, but since I'm not here, if anyone in Crowdcast or, say, the Tube, YouTube, would like to... I think we see Edward Doherty. Was that first?
Yes, Alex, Edward. Is that a yes, I would like to be in it, or is that just yes?
Who wants to win $25 free dollars? Because if you had $25, you'd go to a comic shop unless you needed to like pay rent or buy food or like just really like invest in your future. But otherwise, isn't it nice to have $25 you can't spend elsewhere?
Easy Reader over on YouTube said pick me, and I think
Edward's answering someone's question. Edward's working. Oh yeah, let's do Easy Reader. You've never done this before, right?
Right, Easy Reader. So since this is over on YouTube, I will just mention there's going to be a little bit of a delay, so we'll vamp after each one. But Easy Reader, just drop the answer in the comments on YouTube, and we'll see if this is as easy as when Pete does it. But take it away, Matt.
Also, I'm not looking at YouTube, so Alex, you're going to have to relay their answers to me to find out if they're right.
Lovely assistant.
And folks, let me just tell you, you're not... just watch it on Crowdcast. What are you doing? we got a whole thing going on over here. We could bring you into the stream. They're both just websites. You could go to either website. Folks, today's trivia, you're not going to believe this. It's on topical comic book news. With a small nod to the legend Michael K. Williams, who died tragically this week. Sad. I know, typical... And this is a tribute to Pete's typical bummer of the week. So, okay, so your first question, Easy Reader. You're going to choose A, B, or C. Get all three questions correct. $25 is yours, thanks to our sponsor, Midtown Comics and MidtownComics.com. You can use it in either place. Actually, I found out you can just walk into the damn store and show them the email. So, so answer all three questions correctly. Choose A, B, or C, and $25 will be yours. First question. Question number one. Marvel Comics just announced a new digital-only X-Men series from which creative team? Is it A, Jonathan Hickman and Declan Shalvey? Is it B, Al Ewing and Javier Rodriguez? Or is it C, Martin Starr?
Ooh, those are all great teams, except for the last one, who is just one person.
The last one is one person. You might be able to use process of elimination here. So the question is it A, Jonathan Hickman and Declan Shalvey, or is it B, Al Ewing, Javier Rodriguez?
We'll have to see. Easy Reader, just drop your answer in the comments. Maybe it's A, maybe it's B. Certainly sounds like A to me, but I guess we'll find out what happens.
You know, there's just really no way to know until the answer is, and then I answer which one it is.
I guess we're finding out how long the delay is, which is
kind of long, it turns out.
Much longer than you think.
Buddy, in the time you've taken answering this question, you could just be on Crowdcast. There's a link.
I'll tell you, Boy Racer UK did drop. Oh, A! There we go!
Oh, that's correct, Easy Reader. The answer is A, Jonathan Hickman and Declan Shalvey are doing a new digital-only X-Men series on Marvel Unlimited, usually a platform where all the comics are frustratingly 6 months old. You may have noticed me carefully dodging that topic in our earlier X-Men discussion to not spoil this answer, because I didn't want to write another trivia question on the fly. Question number two, very good, Easy Reader. You're 1 for 3 so far. In the new Defenders series from Al Ewing and Javier Rodriguez, previously mentioned, the Defenders are accidentally transported where? Is it A, the DC Universe? Is it B, a previous version of the Marvel Multiverse? Or is it C, Jason Burke?
This is another tough one, and not to game it out for Easy Reader, but
it's okay.
Again,
he hasn't heard this yet.
I feel like the third answer is, again, a person.
Right.
Not
it is not. I said in the new series, you know, they're transported where. Okay, no, that's a good point. It is a person and not a place. So you can probably rule that out. So is it A, the DC Universe, which would be a licensing nightmare that they haven't pulled off since like the 90s, I think. Maybe in the late 80s, right? Almost JLA versus Avengers. No,
maybe
late 90s, JLA versus
Avengers.
The return to the amalgam age of comics is the most recent crossover, if I recall correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong. Whisper it into a corner and I won't hear it. But or is it B, a previous version of the Marvel Multiverse, which sounds like the needlessly complicated bullshit that Al Ewing is into?
Well, I will say, if that was the twist, it was something that I really enjoyed. And Easy Reader guessed it correctly. It's B.
The answer is B, and I will say I was a little rude about it, but I do enjoy Al Ewing's ceaseless dedication to making every Marvel comic book fit into the same canon somehow, which is what my brain is also trying to do. Easy reader, you are currently 2 out of 3 questions answered correctly. You just need one more, and $25 free at MidtownComics.com or Midtown Comic stores all across New York will be yours. Question number 3. In the recent Suicide Squad annual number 1, the story reintroduces which classic DC villain? Is it A, Sam Scudder, the original Mirror Master, Is it B, Daniel Dunbar, the Dynamite? Or is it C, William Hurt? So it's either A, Sam Scudder, the original Mirror Master, or B, Daniel Dunbar, the Dynamite, or theoretically C, William Hurt. If you think that he's
I think the question there is: was he? You said reintroduced. So was
reintroduces
William, was William Hurt DC. Right? Was William Hurt previously in the DC universe? Is what you have to game out with that third answer.
Right. Exactly.
I haven't read this one. My answer, my guess would be A. To be honest with you, I don't know if
Sam Scudder, the original Mirror Master.
Yes.
All the Scudheads out there know what I'm talking about.
Versus the second one, who I don't know whether that is, but I don't know if Easy Reader's going to go that way.
Oh, Daniel Dunbar, the Dynamite? You don't know him? You don't know the classic Golden Age DC sidekick, Dan the Dynamite? He was obviously the sidekick to TNT. You remember TNT? The classic
I used to have that t-shirt. I forgot about that.
Perhaps you remember James Robinson's Elseworlds book, The Golden Age, in which Dan the Dynamite has his brain replaced by Hitler's brain and becomes Dynaman.
Now I'm starting to think maybe it's the second one. Maybe it's Dan the Dynamite, just based on the amount of information you know about that.
You'd think that, but... also, you might have to game out that I'm the kind of person who would know that anyway.
I'm going to, you know what? Easy Reader is taking a while to answer here. I'm going to go with A.
Alex is going to go with A. This is what's known as a proxy vote. It's covered in Mayor Goodboy. It's a part of the democratic electoral process. And you know what? It's completely legal because the answer is, in fact, A, Sam Scudder, the original Mirror Master, which were Pete here, he would also tell you that is a known Arrowverse villain as well. So some of the fans may know him from the CW shows. Guess what? Easy Reader, you have answered all 3 questions correctly, and you are now to drop your email somewhere. I'm going to say...
I'll take this part.
Okay,
email comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we will get you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Thank you so much for playing. Now, before we wrap... the secret movie.
Hidden quiz. There was a secret quiz.
I forget this every time. It's not just a beat thing.
I came up with it. That's why. Yeah, no one's ever done this before, but I actually hid a secret quiz in the C answers. If you didn't notice this, I named 3 actors: Martin Starr, Jason Burke, and William Hurt, who all were in a movie with Michael K. Williams. Kevin is correct. That movie is Marvel's The Incredible Hulk.
Wow, that's right. If you don't
remember, Michael K. Williams plays a man in Harlem who sees the Hulk throw a car at a thing. Not his biggest role.
So we actually talked about this. We have Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, and we were doing a Phase 1 rewatch.
Really?
And we talked about the Michael K. Williams role in there, which... in the movie, it's Michael K. Williams, already known for The Wire. Like, incredible actor. Everybody loves him. Louis Leterrier, the director of the movie, was like, we got to get Michael K. Williams. We got to get a role. I think it was Louis Leterrier. Edward Norton loved him from The Wire. It was like, I'm going to write him a role in The Incredible
Hulk.
Really
showcases his abilities.
This is no joke. Edward Norton was like, I love him from The Wire, and I'm going to showcase him in this movie. And the role is he's running away from the Abomination in Harlem. I don't even think he says a line. Maybe he's like, whoa.
And no, he looks back and then like looks almost not at the camera, but like forwards in the direction of the camera. And that's the whole shot's maybe 12 seconds long. Yeah, he was already an acclaimed dramatic actor. And they gave him essentially like the Donnell Rawlings line moment from Spider-Man, where it's like, damn, look at that Spider-Man go or whatever. Yeah.
If you like Michael K. Williams, there's a lot of great stuff to watch him in. Obviously, check out The Wire. He's amazing in Lovecraft Country, which is a mixed show, but he's fantastic in it. Boardwalk Empire, of course, and lots of other things. He was good in everything.
He's an incredibly committed dramatic actor who cared so much about his craft. It's really sad. I wanted to pick something that people wouldn't automatically know. I forgot that you mentioned it on the podcast. But yeah, not best known for his comic book work. Just if you want to catch up, watch every episode of The Wire.
There you go. Before we wrap up here, new comic books coming out all the time. DC out today, Marvel out tomorrow, also other stuff out tomorrow. What are you looking forward to? What have you been picking up?
Oh, I've been picking up, I'm looking forward to, you know, I'm just like looking forward to, I'm totally ready for this question that I definitely didn't forget.
I'll tell you what, I'll talk about a couple of things. The big one that I'm really looking forward to is Maze Book number one from Dark Horse Comics. This is a new book by Jeff Lemire that's coming out. He's writing it. He's drawing it. That is always an event. So I'm very, very excited to see what happens with that one. Are there, I think there's a couple of X-Men books coming out. That you're
I'm probably really excited about one of those.
Well, Defenders number two, you could talk about.
Oh, is that this? I was just double checking it. Yeah, I'm really, I hope I didn't blow too much of the reveal of the first Defenders book, but Al Ewing is doing something really interesting here. And he has, as I said, an almost obsessive need to make every Marvel comic book make sense. He's integrated the concept of the floating timeline into canon, the idea that events that clearly at one point took place in the 60s now for some reason took place 20 years ago in 2000. He has chosen to explain that in books. That happened back in The Ultimates. He's done all sorts of insane choices for cosmic Marvel. I'm loving what he's doing in Sword right now. And so it's really interesting to see him given sort of free rein to do a beyond multiversal, omniversal story. But the other, if that sounds too baffling to you, you don't even have to read the words. Javier Rodriguez, I would say worth it for the art alone. If you haven't read Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer's Supreme, I highly recommend picking that up. And I feel like Rodriguez is picking up where he left off on that book, where he has sort of, I would say, a descendant of half Ditko, half Kirby, like psychedelic art, you know, part M.C. Escher, where it's not just strange stars and cosmic rays. It's like I said, it's Escher style surrealism. It's all sorts of fascinating depictions of magic and of you know, cosmic multi-realities. And they give him so many full page spreads, even in the first issue. And he's just nailing it page after page. So highly recommend it.
Yeah, so, so good. Now, I'll mention we're going to be reviewing a lot of titles in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesdays at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed or its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
A couple of
people you want to thank before we wrap up here. We want to thank Dave Scheidt and Miranda Harmon for coming out and talking about Mayor Goodboy. Check that out right now from Penguin Random House. Also, Nat, I want to thank you for coming on. Thanks so much.
Oh, stop it. Stop
no, really.
It.
Really cool appreciate it. Oh, very cool Daredevil shirt. Very awesome. Couple of other things to plug. Actually, Nat, is there anything you want to plug that people should check out?
Yeah, if you're in New York City, come to the setup at Caveat every Thursday at 7 o'clock. It's the stand-up comedy show that I host. If you're not in New York, you're screwed. You can make it here. You can make it anywhere. Move to New York, baby.
Next week on the show, Scott Zakarian, the creator of Superhero Diaries, a new web series, is going to be here, as well as Don Jeans and Nina Tarr. They play Batman and Wonder Woman on that web series, so that should be a lot of fun to talk to them. Also, a ton of podcasts to plug. I mentioned Marvel Vision earlier, our Marvel podcast, going through What If right now every week on Wednesdays. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast every Wednesday after that show. Star Guys, our Stargirl podcast, Tuesday nights. One episode posting very soon as the live show flies. Also, I'll give a little plug. We'll see if it comes together, fingers crossed, but I believe we're going to be doing a Why the Last Man podcast as well, which should be coming out, so that should be very interesting to talk about as that's coming around soon. We'll see if we can actually get it together. Again, fingers crossed.
Why the Cast Man? Just throwing that out there.
That's the name of the show!
Nailed it!
You nailed it, Matt!
Or you just named it now.
No, really. That's the name. I was going to save it for next week, but Why the Cast Man?
I ruined it. Why the Cast
and
Man?
And I already ran through all of Kibbe's song here, but patreon.com/comicbookclub, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. On iTunes in particular, leave us a comment there and leave us a question in the comments. If you leave us a question in the comments, we'll answer it live on the show the week after that. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. Sorry, Brett. I'll make the cocktail next time.